This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Craig Shirley, who is the author of the brand new book, Rendezvous with Destiny, Ronald Reagan and the Campaign That Changed America. Obviously, it's a highlight of the 1980 presidential campaign. A few years ago, Craig came out with a fascinating look at the 1976 Reagan campaign, where he barely lost to incumbent President Gerald Ford for the Republican nomination. Obviously, in 1980, Reagan succeeded in winning the nomination and then defeated President Jimmy Carter. And Craig, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Greg.
It would seem that coming out of 1976, when Reagan so nearly won the nomination, that he would be a shoo-in as the clear front-runner, but that wasn't the case. Why did he have such a hard time breaking away from the likes of his eventual running mate, George H.W. Bush, and even John Connally?
Excellent question. There was not any simple reason. There were a number of reasons. One was the failings of his own campaign staff, who Reagan had been out and about on the road constantly from 1976, 77, 78, and then inexplicably for the whole month or whole year of 1979, John Sears pulled Reagan off the road, and it fed the rumors that Reagan was too old to be president. And if you just let Reagan be Reagan, as we've heard before, the issue never would have come up. But in doing so, he played into the hands of Reagan's enemies, who spread these rumors, and most of his enemies, in fact, were inside the Republican Party, spread these rumors through the media that Reagan had pulled up in the in 79, you know, because he had to rest up, and that he was too old, and the debates were past his bedtime, and there was just scurrilous comments made in Republican Party circles against Ronald Reagan all through 1979 in the national media and in the higher echelons of the Republican Party. Also, he had some very worthy challengers, and so the fact that he had worthy challengers was evidence to the fact that a lot of people thought he could not be nominated in 1980. You had John Connally, you had Bob Dole, you had John Anderson, Phil Crane, you had George Bush, Howard Baker. All of them were worthy adversaries, especially Connally, Dole, and Baker and Bush.
And, Craig, you point out in the book it's not just in the 1970s, but even throughout a very successful administration, that the establishment really didn't like Reagan. They have after the fact, because Reagan was so beloved by the people. Why didn't they like him?
Because he upset the apple cart, because he challenged the status quo, because in 1977 he went out and said, the new Republican Party I envision cannot be the party of the corporate boardroom or the country club. It's got to be the party of the man on the street, the cop on the street, the farmer, the entrepreneur, the homemaker, their religious leaders. It cannot be the party of the elites. And the elites, who still clung to the remaining vestiges of the dying power of the Republican Party, were furious at Reagan about this, because he was going after what they had represented their entire lives. And so they declared war on him because he said, the Republican Party cannot survive just appealing to a few people. It has to. The only way it can survive is to appeal to many with a common theme.
We're talking with Craig Shirley. The book is Rendezvous with Destiny. And as you mentioned, Craig, removing Reagan from the campaign trail lost his advantage. George Bush won Iowa, leading us into the New Hampshire primary, which was kind of make or break. How was Reagan able to reverse George Bush's big mo?
Because he took control of his own destiny, and Reagan was always at his best and always came through just fine when he controlled his own destiny. He had, pulled up in 79 at the recommendation of his, in fact, the insistence of his campaign staff, and he was just crestfallen, losing Iowa. Don't forget, Ronald Reagan had been a very popular local celebrity in Iowa all during the 30s when he was on WHO and radio in Des Moines. You know, doing broadcasting the Cubs games and Big Ten football. And so he was a very popular figure there. Dutch Reagan was known all throughout Iowa and the Midwest. And he'd been there many, many times all through, you know, the 50s, 60s, and 70s. But here he goes and snubs Iowa voters. And you know, he refused to go to the Iowa Des Moines Registered debate. And the Republican primary voters of caucus goers were just furious at Reagan, so they took it out on him and gave Bush the victory in Iowa, and Reagan was just devastated by this. But after that, he took control of his own destiny. He told John Sears, he said, I'm going to campaign the way I want to campaign. And for the intervening 5 weeks in between the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary, Reagan was there in New Hampshire just constantly. And as a matter of fact, in the last 2 weeks, he was there, I believe 13 out of 14 days in New Hampshire campaigning the way he liked to do so, which was to get out and meet people and talk to people.
He even canned John Sears right around the election day for the New Hampshire primary.
On the day of the primary.
That's a major shakeup. How significant was that?
It was extremely significant. John Sears had been a major force in Reagan's presidential career from 1975 up until 1980. Charlie Black, who was Sears' assistant, was the national political director, once told me, and I think there was a lot of wisdom in what he said. He said that Ronald Reagan never would have been president had he not hired John Sears in 1975 and fired him in 1980, and I think Charlie was right. In 1975, John Sears was one of the few truly national, respected Republican Party consultants and operatives who saw that Reagan had what it took to be president of the United States. And he's the one who got Reagan into the race in 76, and had Reagan not run and lost in 76, he never would have run in 80. But by 1980, John had changed, and he was more of a hindrance than a help to Reagan and his campaign. And so, something had to give, and it wasn't going to be the candidate, because anybody who knew Ronald Reagan knew that he was an immovable object when he dug in his heels. And so it was he that made the decision to jettison John and his two principal deputies.
Craig, we talked about George Bush as an adversary. Let's move forward to the Republican convention and all the drama about choosing a running mate. And obviously, George Bush eventually was the choice, but only after negotiations broke down to put former President Ford, the great rival of Reagan's back in the 76 campaign, on the ticket. There was talk of a so-called co-presidency.
That's right.
What sort of division of labor did people have in mind as they tried to put this together?
Well, the Machiavellian behind all of this was Henry Kissinger. He was just a figure of loathing to conservatives, as you recall, in the 70s and into the early 80s, because he was the architect of a detente, which most conservatives saw as the slow-motion surrender of the West to the East. And everybody knew that Kissinger was angling to get back into power because he wanted to return as Secretary of State, and so he was the one who really pushed the co-presidency. And what Ford wanted was not only unprecedented, but most likely unconstitutional. What he wanted was to be an executive vice president, that he would act as a super-empowered chief of staff and would clear the president's schedule, would veto, cabinet appointees and, White House appointees. And Reagan would simply be a figurehead. And it was nonsense. It was silly. It was ridiculous. And fortunately, in the end, it fell apart. What forced Reagan into seriously considering Ford was the fact that he and Mrs. Reagan were really very much against taking George Bush. Had been lingering hostility between the Bushes and the Reagans going back to 1978, when Reagan campaigned against George W. Bush, the 43rd president, when he ran for Congress down there in Odessa, Texas, in 1978. And Reagan supported a fellow by the name of Jim Reese, who was the conservative in the primary. So there'd been this lingering hostility, and then, of course, he lost respect for Bush after the Nashua debate, when he thought that Bush melted under pressure. He didn't like the line voodoo economics, and then there had been slurs by the Bush campaign and by Bush over Reagan's age. And so all this combined to create a lot of animosity on the part of the Reagans toward taking George Bush, even though probably on paper he was made the most sense, because he was the one who would come in second in the primaries. He could reach out to moderates in the party. He could reach out. He had the foreign policy experience. So only in the end did Reagan take Bush, but only very, very reluctantly.
The Republicans thought they had a good chance to win in 1980. Not only was the economy in the tank, interest rates soaring, American hostages held captive in Iran, national morale was at an all-time low. Yet in the fall campaign, even after barely defeating Ted Kennedy, Jimmy Carter looked in pretty decent shape. In addition to the debate, which we'll get to in a minute, was the reason that Carter remained pretty viable for a while, and what eventually worked against him?
Well, Carter remained viable because, again, Reagan's campaign was proving after the... Now, they had... He gave a brilliant, brilliant speech in Detroit at the convention and helped unify the party, and it was just a magnificent speech. And he started out, you know, 20, 25 points ahead in the polls, but then his campaign coasted through the summer of 1980, and then Reagan started making gaffes. The campaign was making mistakes. Carter was slowly unifying his party because Ted Kennedy was fading as a challenger, so that by September, Carter had cut Reagan's lead in half. And then by mid-October, Carter had actually moved ahead in the national polls and was catching Reagan in the Electoral College. Reagan had been stuck between 220 and 240 in the Electoral College. The campaign that Carter waged had nothing to do with his record as president. His Pat Caddell told me, who was his pollster, that they didn't have a record they could run on. You had hyperinflation, you had hyper-interest rates, you had hostages in Tehran. You had the Soviets in Afghanistan. The world situation was crumbling. The economy was a mess. The only way to win re-election was to destroy Ronald Reagan, and this they set out to do. They called, you know, Jimmy Carter went out and said that Ronald Reagan wanted to separate America, you know, black from white, Christian from Jew, North from South. He said he wanted to start World War III, that he had an, you know, itchy, he was a nuclear cowboy with an itchy finger. They went after Reagan with hammer and tong. They hit him with the kitchen sink. And the Reagan campaign wasn't effectively responding. It was only until the debate, 1 week before the election, where Reagan once again took matters into his own hands and turned in the superb performance, beat Carter in the debates, and closed the sale with the American voter by saying, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And that was the line that sealed the deal with the American voter.
Couple questions left here, Craig. In the end, Reagan, of course, won over 50% of the vote. He won 489 electoral votes, the worst drubbing of an incumbent in many, many years.
Worse than Barry Goldwater, worse than Herbert Hoover.
Yeah, that's certainly up there in the record books. You mentioned before the formidable candidates that Reagan ran against in the primary. One of them, of course, became an independent candidate, John Anderson, who picked a Democrat as a running mate. In the end, he only took about 5% of the vote. Right. Did he take away evenly, or did he hurt Reagan more than Carter?
He actually hurt Carter, but only marginally, according to the post-election polling. Anderson could go in two directions, but he had such animosity toward Carter. He could run as a Republican, a liberal Republican, and take votes away from Reagan. Or he could run just as a straight-out liberal and eschew any Republican affiliation and therefore take votes away from Carter. He decided to run as a straight-out liberal because he is so antagonized by Carter because they had tried to keep him off the ballot in the states. They tried to keep him off the debates. They tried to keep him from getting any FEC money from the Federal Election Commission. So the Carter campaign had done a sufficient job antagonizing John Anderson, so that he went after Carter's base rather than going after Reagan's base.
And last question. Some have said, Craig, that where the Republican Party stands right now is kind of where it was following Watergate and the 76 elections, perhaps, and that lessons can be learned from how Reagan in particular rebounded from that. Good parallel or not quite an exact parallel?
No, I think it's an excellent parallel. The only difference being is that there is no national political leader to pull all this together. There is a void on the right, as there was in the 70s, and you see it being filled by the Tea Party protesters and talk radio and folks such as yourself who are giving voice to a frustrated populist base in America who believes that freedom is the most important thing and not justice and not security and not Obama and not being coddled by government, but being independent on their own and being free to pursue their own dreams unfettered. Nobody is speaking to that right now, certainly not in the Democratic Party, and very few in the Republican Party. So the leadership, unfortunately, is going to have to come from the people themselves until some leader emerges. I don't see that leader right now on the horizon, but they usually emerge.
Craig?
But to say that there's another Ronald Reagan in our future is like saying, is there another Thomas Jefferson in our future or another Abraham Lincoln? He ranks as one of the four greatest presidents of American history. So I think we're probably looking at more, you know, somewhat of a lesser leader than a Ronald Reagan.
The book is Rendezvous with Destiny, Ronald Reagan and the Campaign That Changed America. Craig, thank you very much for being with us.
Greg, thank you so much.
I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.